Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, celebrity interviews, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
Welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. For a radio audience tuning in at WYAD 94.1 FM and WYADonline.com, we're glad that you all can be with us. Also, tuning in through online affiliates around the world, we're glad that you all could join us as well. As we look around us in the world today, we see one of the big issues that happens is the things impacting our planet due to the climate. Well, our next guest has written a book that not only addresses this, but also allows us to see ways that we can be able to act, to be able to change what's happening around us. We're excited to welcome photographer and author Tim Palmer to our broadcast today. His book is called Seek Higher Ground, The Natural Solution to Our Urgent Flooding Crisis here in the South. We're experiencing some heavy rains right now, so it's a very appropriate topic for our audience, but something I think people literally around this world can relate to as well. We'll talk to Tim not only about the expansive research he did for this book, but also what it's been like for him to see the early response and what he hopes you as readers are able to take away from it as well. Tim, thank you so much for taking on the time to be with us. Appreciate the time today.
Hey, Cyrus, I'm thrilled to be with you.
Well, Tim, this is a topic that's very obvious in the way the book is written that you're very passionate about, and I want to first of all say to you, as a reader, how much I appreciated the way you approached this topic, because I think what happens sometimes, Tim, and I can speak broadly for our audience, is that we hear about these issues, but it's in such a way that it does not seem personal. You really make this an issue that is something that is real for us. So I want to ask you, what has it been like for you to see the way that people are responding to the book so far?
Yeah, well, I'm real happy about all that, Cyrus. You know, I put a lot into this book. I was a flood victim myself many years ago. At the time, it was the most damaging hurricane flood in American history that has been eclipsed many times since by worse floods. But back in 1972, the Hurricane Agnes flood was the big one, and I happened to live at ground zero of the storm. So, you know, I got the eye-level view of high water and what it means, and I also happened to be working as the county planner in that region back then in Pennsylvania. And so it was my job not only to try to figure out how to recover from the damage and the catastrophe, but more importantly, how to avoid having this kind of disaster happen in the future, and that ultimately led to this book.
Yeah, I love it. I love the fact that you were able to take something, again, that was impactful, but also you were able to write this book, the emotion comes through, but also the history comes through. So I was curious about something, Tim, when I was reading the book and prepping for this segment. How much time went into this book? What was the time frame from when you decided to write it to when you finally finished it?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I've kind of wondered about that myself because I drew on experience, you know, going back literally 50 years,
yeah.
Showing my age here. But, you know, I've had flood experience that has accumulated since that Agnes hurricane in 1972. But the actual work on the book, you know, like sitting down day to day, sunrise to sunset, talking to people, going to new floods, pulling this all together. I worked a pretty good solid 2 years on that.
Okay. Well, I tell you, one of the things that I really like about it is that as you're able to take us through the book, and we're going to be talking about a particular chapter in particular for me, is that I love the fact that you're able to give us the history. And, you know, whether we're talking about the Folsom Dam that was built in 1956, as you talk about dams and what we need to know about that, but also, of course, the impact of things other than ourselves. You talk about wildlife, and I thought this was really interesting because in the chapters Rivers Need Floods, I thought it was really interesting how you made us look at that a little bit different. Talk to us about that. What was the educational aspect of this book like for you, Tim, to show how there are some things that benefits from floods?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for your comment on weaving the history and the economics and the ecology and all that together. To me, that was a real prime objective here. You know, I didn't want to write just a history. That kind of has been done about floods. And really the important message is, what are we going to do about this problem now?
Yeah.
And so that led me directly into a story about nature and people of culture, economics, of engineering, ecology, equity, policy and politics. I mean, the whole schmear. It, you know, it's way more than a story of destruction and mayhem that we
right.
often hear about. It's a story of life in America in the year 2024. So one of the kind of unknown aspects of floods for many people is the fact that they are absolutely essential natural events on the face of the earth. Floods have been with us since the beginning of time. They are part of the way the hydrologic cycle works. We've all heard about this. The water evaporates over the ocean. The wind blows it over the land. It rains. It runs back to sea. The cycle goes on forever. That brings us our water. Sometimes it goes back to sea in really big amounts. And those are the floods. They're not only inevitable, but they are essential to the way the earth works in processes that many of us, you know, are not familiar with. For example, fish need floods because floods are what shape the riverbed in beneficial ways for fish and all life. Floods are what form the riffles. They provide oxygen to water. They form the deep pools that provide cool water that fish need. So if you like fish, you got to like floods. Floods are what wash the sand and silt out to the ocean that forms our ocean beaches. The Pacific surf takes that sand away, but rivers are constantly bringing it in. So if you like ocean beaches, you know, in the Gulf of Mexico or wherever, you got to like the floods that bring that sand down to sea level. And groundwater, likewise. Half of us depend on groundwater for our drinking water supplies. Much of that is provided by floods because that is when the water washes over the banks, soaks deeply into the ground to be pumped out and used by people in the natural systems later. So floods are actually essential to many of these critical ways that the earth works. It's a whole other side to the flooding story that I thought needed to be told.
Right. And did you know going in then, that brings up this question then, Tim, that you know going in that this book was not just going to be about problems and solutions, but also education, that it was an education that you were going to be giving the reader as well?
Well, yeah, you know, I thought of it as my own education, Cyrus. I mean, you know, when I was a flood victim, I didn't know any of this. I grew up in western Pennsylvania in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains with stories of disaster from the flood of 1936 and onward, and within a population that had a very firm belief on the sanctity and the solution of dams and levees. Because after the big floods earlier in the century, dams and levees were considered the answer. It was all structural. You know, we thought we could build dams to stop the floods from occurring. And this certainly goes for the whole Mississippi Valley. Excuse me. We thought that we could build levees and prevent floods from overflowing the rivers into our neighborhoods. Well, none of that really turned out to be true. I mean, we can stop the small and medium-sized floods, but time and time again, we found that the really big ones overtop the dams. They overtop and break the levees. The big flood of 1993 in the Mississippi, during that flood, 1,000 of 1,500 major levees failed. So those approaches were not really adequate, and that led me way back then to look further to what's the real solution. And the most absolutely common sense, economical, equitable, ecological way to deal with this is to just get out of the way. Rivers are going to flood. We should not be standing in their path. There are a lot of other places to go. Only 7% of America floods. We can go elsewhere. You know, it's not easy to do that, but there are other places we can go to live and not be subject to the hazards of floods.
And I think that is it. In fact, you talk about that in the chapter Moving to Higher Ground. Tim, you made the statement. I just thought about it as you were talking. You say people have long understood the logic of moving from homes that will inevitably be flooded to homes that won't. But logic is only logic. And a lot of people don't pay much attention to it. To that point, I wanted to mention something that really resonated with me in chapter Hires, Floods, and the Endless Storm. You say this, and this is why I think this book is so important. You write, informed people now know that climate change is real and that floods grow worse, yet motivation to address the problem lags colossally behind severities of threats. I want to talk about that because it's really interesting that we know these problems are there, but when it comes to the solutions, we tend to talk more about the problem itself than what we're going to do about it. What has that been like for you to see over time? Because you talk about that in the book as well. What has that been like for you to see how inaction has really become the bigger problem?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the and that was one of the most enlightening aspects of this, Cyrus, to actually begin to get a grip on the fundamental problem, and that is this. Floods are the ultimate teacher of one of life's greatest lessons, and that is that we regard the laws of nature as optional when in fact they are absolute. And meanwhile, we regard our own habits and laws and practices as absolute when in fact we can change them whenever we have the collective will to do so. In our minds, we perfectly reverse the way the world actually works. And nowhere is this really more clear than in floods. So to me, what we need to do is recognize that we're never going to totally stop the floods. We have to take more responsibility for what we do and where we live. Now, this is not to diminish the difficulty of moving out of the path of floods. You know, many cities, I mean, just think of Memphis, Tennessee, big city, big levee, big river. It's going to be there. We're not going to move it. New Orleans is going to be there. Sacramento is. Portland, Oregon is. We need levees that actually do the job, and it's going to be very expensive to maintain those and improve them to the flood levels that the future will hold. We can talk more about that if you want to as well. So it's not easy to move, but here's another interesting number I quickly ran across. 90% of the floodplain in America is not heavily developed. It's farmland, it's open space, it's lightly settled rural areas. There are places where there's no way we're going to be able to afford the kind of levees or dam construction that's necessary to keep people safe. And in those areas, it really makes sense to get up and move to higher ground, which, you know, ended up being the central theme of the book.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk about that for a second. Tim, was there a double meaning intended for the title of the book? Because, like you just said, the seek higher ground is definitely a literal thing that, of course, individuals have to do. But was there also a psychological thing there when it comes to thinking about this topic that we would have to do as well mentally?
Well, you could look at it that way, I guess. But, you know, I really didn't so much. I mean, I'm kind of a nuts and bolts guy. And I really meant move. I really meant move to higher ground. I meant it.
Yeah.
But I kind of like this, Cyrus. Yes. So let me say yes. You know, there is further meaning here in pursuing a solution that gets us toward really solving the problem, you know, that directs us more toward the essential kind of view we need to be taking about our relationship with nature in these days. And what the important new element here, and the reason I wrote this book when I did, I mean, 50 years after my formative event with floods, decades after I was working on floodplain management and trying to help people move, the reason I wrote it when I did is that the changing climate means the floods are getting worse. So, as I said, we've relied on dams and levees and frankly, relief, which simply pays people for damages afterwards. we've relied on those for decades and decades, two centuries, really. And it hasn't really worked. I mean, every year flood damages get worse, no matter what we've done. But now the floods are getting worse. The age of denial for this issue is over. We're going to have to take a different approach in the future. And that's the approach that I wanted to outline in this book.
And I guess for myself, the reason why my mind went there, that, Tim, is something that you wrote in the chapter, Moving to Higher Ground. And as you were talking about some real examples, you said this, bypassing all that and thinking ahead to a new era of climate, or perhaps only to the rising waters of the approaching night, you were talking to the individual and you asked, are you ready for the floods to get worse? And I think it really does help us to kind of think, you know, we have to change the way we think about this as well. You know, and I, because as you said, they it's getting worse. It's not getting better.
Yeah.
So it definitely,
right.
You know, it does, you know, cause us to have to be able to kind of elevate the way we think about this. So what was your hope then after being able to write this book now and for people now to be able to read it around the world? Tim, what did you hope Seek Higher Ground did for them?
Well, you know, I hope it'll make a difference somehow. I mean, we all hope that our lives can do that in the work that we adopt and, you know, and pursue as our own private missions, whatever they are. And, you know, I think my hope really was to open other people's eyes to the changes that are inevitable here with increasing flood frequency, severity, and geography. And to realize that the way we've spent money, taxpayer money, in the past has not been adequate, that we need to change the policies. And some of those are actually should be easy to do. You know, it's not like we're doing rocket science here. You know, we're dealing with floods that we know a whole lot about. We know exactly where the flood hazards are because, you know, we can map those. So I'm hoping to motivate direction towards solving those problems and also toward taking greater personal responsibility for where we live. And again, many of us, we're victims. We now live on floodplains through no fault of our own, certainly, and we've got to deal with that somehow. But for anyone who's thinking of building a new house or moving on to a floodplain, those people should be aware of what the risks are and of, you know, of other options and places where we can go.
Yeah, I think that is the big thing. And it's such an important conversation, Tim, as I mentioned, for our listening audience, but also all of us around this country and this world to think about, of course, our relationship with the world, our relationship with nature, but also our understanding and how that should really inform us when it comes to making decisions. Again, everyone, Tim Palmer has been our guest. Seek Higher Ground is the book, The Natural Solution to Our Urgent Flooding Crisis. The book is available through our friends at Amazon.com, or, of course, you can get it through your favorite local bookstores, published by University of California Press. Tim, you also have a website. Let our audience know how they can stay connected with you.
Yeah. You can tune up my website, www.timpalmer.org, and you'll see this book there as well as the other books I have written.
All right. Well, Tim, thank you again for working with us to get this conversation scheduled, and looking forward to speaking with you again.
Hey, Cyrus, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much. It's really been great to be with you.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Tim. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live, and let's go make today amazing. Take care.